Around 575 BC, a great stone ramp, some 250 feet in length, had been pile-driven up to the gateway of the Acropolis, permanently improving access to the summit, and over the following years, what had been a jumble of primitive ruins was transformed into a shrine as spectacular as any in Greece. Not only masonry, but statues of every conceivable size crowded the summit. Every building project was the gift of a different clan. What better way, after all, for a Eupatrid to show off than to adorn the city's skyline? Another distinguishing feature of the cosmopolitan elite had become, during the 7th century BC, a relish for sport. By the first half of the 6th century, the games at Olympia had been supplemented by a whole circuit of other festivals. In 566 BC, even the Athenians got in on the act with a magnificent festival in honour of Athena. A competitor who won first prize at the games might expect to have statues raised in his honour. But it was perilous for a man to reach too far, as amply demonstrated by the fate of Cylon, a Eupatrid, and one of Athens' few Olympic stars. The champion, returning home with his victor's olive crown, had grown so puffed up with conceit that he had dared, in 632 BC, to occupy the Acropolis and proclaim himself master of Athens. The scandalized city had been plunged into street fighting. Cylon and his followers had found themselves barricaded on the hill. They had sought sanctuary in a temple. Then, granted a promise of free passage by the Archon, they had duly emerged, only to be stoned and put to death. A salutary lesson on the bitter fruits of setting one's sights too high. Except that in other states more in tune with the modern than Athens, men such as Cylon had already proved themselves vanguards of the future. Tyrannides, the Greeks called such regimes, tyrannies. For them, the term didn't have the blood-stained connotations that the English word tyrant has for us. Indeed, a Greek tyrant, almost by definition, had to have the popular touch, since otherwise he couldn't hope to cling to power for long. Trumpets, slogans, and public works, such were the enthusiasms he would invariably parade. He would also be expected to provide to a people that might have been racked by faction fighting for decades the stamp of firm government. Naturally, in exchange for granting his fellow citizens the blessings of order and prosperity, a tyrant could be expected to make a few demands of his own. He might require that certain illegal measures, certain regrettable precautions, be overlooked. Bodyguards, for instance. Controls on free speech. The occasional midnight knocking on doors. It was the tyrant's own peers, of course, who would wince most painfully at these humiliations. Few greater torments could be imagined for an aristocrat than to endure a tyranny. No wonder that Megacles, the Archon who had tricked Cylon's followers from their temple sanctuary to their deaths, had been willing to risk the taint of sacrilege, for he had been head of the Alcmaeonids, one of the grandest of all Athenian clans. And to be sure, the penalty he and all his family paid had been a terrible one. Even in defence of freedom, a crime such as Megacles had committed against the gods could not be readily forgiven. It had taken a full 30 years of furious foot-dragging by the Alcmaeonids before the Megacles clan were finally brought to court. But in the end, around 600 BC, they had all been sentenced to exile in perpetuity.